Tyke Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. Life in a war zone is obviously not an easy situation, but to grow up in such a setting is an even more daunting challenge. Milwaukee area writer Sandy Braille's new novel for middle grade readers tells a coming-of-age tale set in occupied Norway at the start of World War II. Odin's Promise relates the story of Mari, who finds herself growing up and learning about her inner resources as German soldiers patrol the streets of her Norwegian village. Braille is with us in the Lake Effect studio to tell the story of the book. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me here.
What first piqued your interest in the story of the Norwegian resistance during World War II?
Well, I'm not Norwegian to begin with. I have a good friend who is the only child of a Norwegian immigrant and has no relatives at all in this area and wanted to travel back to Norway to meet the people that she already had met in the old days through mail and needed someone to travel with. And it was the best decision I ever made. And on that original trip many years ago, most of her relatives of her generation or older had lived through World War II and the occupation for those long years. And the pictures they showed and the stories they told, I was a writer then, and I knew there had to be something I could do with this. So that was the origin of it.
So that difficult chapter in Norwegian history sounds like it is still alive today over there.
It is. And in fact, the research that I've done over all these years has – and I'm continuing to do now – has revealed that it was something that almost developed a mystique, the extent to which both the organized resistance, the military, and the – secret communications and almost a spy network were organized, have been documented somewhat in movies and in various books. But the day-to-day resistance of people that helped them survive the extremely harsh conditions was not covered as thoroughly. And that really is what kept communities going. And many of those same people had roles in the other aspects of the resistance as well. But virtually every family was involved, and the mystique surrounding that has never faded.
And Odin's Promise is not a true story, but clearly there are many portions of it that are informed by real-life events.
Absolutely. I had started the research, and then in the process of attempting many versions of writing it, got stalled at every point trying to tell the original story that centered around the wedding that had appealed to me. And along the way, over many years, the advice was this really should be like this whole genre should be a middle grade story. And my characters weren't young people, and I wanted to tell it my way. So despite the fact that I was learning a lot about writing, I was not doing as well as I should have learned to do about taking good advice from knowledgeable people who also write for that age range and said, there's something here you could work on.
Why did they think middle grade fiction was the right genre for this?
Well, my original thought was, if you've ever seen Jan Brett's illustrated picture books, was when I heard the story, this would make such a fabulous picture book for the scenery and the customs and the costumes and everything else. And I used picture books with older readers and thought this would be great. But over the course of time, picture books have changed so radically. If picture books are for older readers now, they are almost entirely more information-based than just the history of this. And for younger readers, it was – the characters were too old. The story was too complex. And so they were looking at aiming up. And in the process of that, it just was perfectly clear that the characters were all adults. If you were going to do anything with it for kids, you needed to – which is what I wanted to do, something that could be read in schools. Along the lines of Snow Treasure by Maria McSwiggan, and that was just a perennial favorite, and others that had been – that I had used with my students. So
you clearly – you introduced a younger character, and you basically tell the story through the eyes of Mari, who is a middle grade girl herself in this time.
Yes. But I couldn't find her through all the reason I kept saying no was she wasn't anywhere in my head, and it was the research that brought her to me. A doctoral presentation by someone who is a specialist in Norwegian history and language happened to be published by the University of Wisconsin Press, in fact. And in digging around, I found that, and she had documented journals of people who had lived through those long years, many of whom were adults, but quite a few of whom were really young people. And keeping a journal was at risk to your life as well, because there were raids on homes and everything was searched. And so the young people who had done it really offered me a voice that let me discover their point of view.
And so this essentially becomes both a chronicle of this year in her life and year in the life of this town, but it's also something of a coming of age story. I mean, she is growing from a little girl or little one, as she's referred to, into someone who really can play a role in the way things are going in this community.
And surprises herself in the process. The reality that was just beyond her comprehension whatsoever that was confronting her helped her discover things in herself that she didn't realize were there. And she came to some of that self through the partnership with her dog when she had been left to her own devices as her older siblings and parents were busy with more mature lives. So I think she was ready for it when it happened and found that in herself.
And we don't want to give away too many of the twists and turns, but give us a flavor for what life was like in this small village during the German occupation.
Well, this is only the first year, and it continued for many, and things got much, much, much harsher. But in that first year, the invasion occupation was really very similar to the events that we're hearing about in Ukraine and Crimea. The idea that a very powerful force that had been moving across Europe had declared that they were there to protect Norway, neutral Norway, from the Allies. And in the process, they tried to sell that big time.
Propaganda war in many ways.
Oh, totally. And that another thing in this research by Dr. Stoker, she shows many archival posters, and that plays a role in the story too. Posters were up constantly saying Norwegians and Germans are brothers in their genetic making, in fact. So that was hard to hear too, because nobody – there were some who supported the Germans, whether out of belief or because of being having an easier life in the process.
You got more rations.
Absolutely. It was definitely – and benefits with jobs. In that first year already, there were people who lost their jobs. The effects on Jews – and Norway didn't have a large Jewish population, but the effects on the Jewish population were already coming into play. And within a year forward of that, they were – gathered up and exported. And the need for ration cards, the need for secrecy was a major part of it, and not knowing who you could trust, which is truly probably the most challenging part that Mari dealt with and that everyone had to deal with.
Even in a place like school where she has friends that she's not sure how much she should share with them.
Right. It's one of the first hard lessons she had to learn from her family was you can't believe what you see on the surface, that what no matter what someone says or what you've known about them before, one of the expressions they used was they might be striped, which would mean that on depending on who they were facing, they could present the face that would benefit them most. And some kids might have been opposed to the German occupation but had a parent who was going to take what they chatted about at the table and benefit from it.
Why did you choose a smaller town versus setting this somewhere like Oslo or Bergen or Stavanger?
Well, in part because Itre Arne is where I visited, and that's where her family is from. And the setting and not only the physical setting but the community that was there and wrapped itself around the fjord and the size of the community allowed me to find those characters much more readily. In fact, it's such a terrific place because it is so closely related to Bergen and the train connections. People commute through the train, right, to go over to Bergen. So it allowed me to reflect some things related to why the presence would be so great there, because the Germans didn't occupy every little village and knoll equally, but the access to the fjord, which is actually one of the longest and deepest in Norway and is still used for submarine maneuvers. It's so deep. And all of those things are part of why the Germans were desperately eager to maintain total control of Norway to begin with, and the fact that Bergen and its port was right across the mountain.
Mari and her family have several encounters with some of the occupying soldiers. And again, we don't want to give much away, but you portray them with some nuance. Some of the German soldiers are truly bad or evil, but others less so. Why did you want to make sure you made some of the German soldiers have some redeeming value to them?
Well, I've thought about that a great deal because it didn't start out with a conscious effort to do that. But that process, too, probably reflects decades of my life in that my father was the son of immigrants from Germany and went to fight in World War II on German soil, which had to have been the most conflicting thing possible, although he, like the rest of that generation, really resisted discussing those things at all until they were quite elderly, and then we lost some of that. So I knew there could be an internal conflict in a soldier, but then I also have lived, as we all have, through more than a decade of ongoing war. And you hear those same stories coming back from our soldiers and recognize that some, I do think, American or not, have had some evil elements to them. The things they've done have been considered atrocities and should be. But others have found in themselves through the process the conflict they feel in wanting to defend us and yet – or be loyal. And there can be other reasons too. How many people join the military because they need the financial security of it? And in Germany, there wasn't much choice. They recruited anyone who had a pulse.
What do you hope your young readers come away with when they finish this book?
Well, first of all, I hope they find themselves doing what I always did as an avid reader, which is just fall into the book. I hope I've written a story that is strong enough that despite it not being a familiar one or something – characters and using some language from Norway and situations that they might not recognize, especially the small village, that they nevertheless feel they've been there and they've known her and they care about her. And that's – number one for any writer. If I can do that, I can walk away. But on top of that, I really hope it opens the door to them to be able to view things with the same kind of full open mind, to recognize that situations aren't black and white and that no matter what age you are, what I often inscribe for young people is that you are stronger than you think you are. You're always stronger than you think you are. And the question is whether or not you can find that strength.
Sandy Braille, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. It's been an honor and a privilege to be here, and I enjoyed it very much.
Milwaukee area writer Sandy Braille's new middle grade novel is called Odin's Promise. It's published by Crispin Books. You'll find a link to more about it and more about Sandy at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We turn to wine and cheese to close the show. First up, wine contributor Ray Pfister when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.